In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Huh? Huh? What'd you think of that, huh?
That was pretty good.
That is our brand new intro given to us on a completely unasked for voluntary basis by friend of the show, Sir Guido.
And we're very thankful for that.
Yeah, well, it gets really crazy, actually. Sir Guido, literally, he sent us an intro that he had made without being asked, and it was awesome, but it used copyrighted music, and we were concerned, and he looked it up, and he's like, this might be a problem. And we were like, okay, well, we thought it was cool anyway. He went to the trouble of finding pod-safe music and recorded another intro and an outro, which hopefully I will get to work at the end of this. Which is even more awesome. The outro is my favorite thing ever. So he is very cool, and we're going to pay him lots of money once we hit it big. Anyway.
Which will probably be never, but...
No, soon. We're blowing up. We're huge. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, Episode 2. Disclaimer, this podcast will be explicit and really not funny or good, and no one should listen at all. Okay, got that out of the way. No, we're huge. Actually, this brings up a really good point. I would like to speak to our listening audience, kind of serious for a moment. I know we're kind of a funny show normally, but audience, listener, what the fuck is wrong with you? I told you it was awful. It was awful. And yet, dozens of you are listening to this thing. Driving me crazy. I've been receiving artwork, I've been receiving intro, I've been receiving feedback, I've been having to do work. Pretty soon it's going to be an issue of bandwidth because people like this. I told you guys, if I had to do anything, that I was out. So you are this close, he said on radio with a gesture, to me turning this podcast around and we'll go home. So knock it off.
Interestingly enough, we've received more feedback and, you know, the artwork and everything. We've received more than that than actual new topics.
Yeah. Actually, the one thing we have not been receiving are actual topics to the hat. So please work on that. Email themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. But I have gotten a lot of reviews and critiques and artwork submitted by people because they thought it was cool, and artwork submitted by other people because they thought my artwork sucks and they can go screw themselves. But
of course, now my opinion of all this is it's really very cool. I'm very excited about how interested people are and, you know, how they're participating in the whole thing.
But it's really amazing. We've gotten better than I could have imagined in terms of people listening and people commenting and people liking it. And guys, I actually listened to it. I am that narcissistic. The day afterwards, I listened to it, and it really is crap, people. Like, we're horrible, and I don't know what's wrong with you, but it's very sweet. And the big thing is, it's William and I both agree it's really fun. So even if you guys did hate it, we're going to keep doing it. But there's been way more support than I would have expected, especially right out of the gate.
Which has been fun. I mean, he's complaining about it because that's how Tony is, but I think he's also having fun. He just doesn't want to admit it. You know how he is.
Do they? You know, listener.
Well, actually, a lot of people listening probably know you more, you know, better than they know
I would
me.
Assume. Well, yeah, because you publicized it to like 3 people.
No, that's not true. You know, probably. Well, part of the problem is we know a lot of the same people.
That is true.
So, you know, I'm letting people know about it who you don't know, and there really aren't very many people that I know that you don't know that at the same time would be interested in listening to
that have no taste. Like, all the people I know are too observant enough to realize that, you know, this is
um
I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
That's good radio, too.
I probably like, threw you right off.
You and you're actually wanting to speak. So what kind of week did you have? I haven't seen you. We almost saw each other this morning for pancakes, but didn't happen.
Yes,
so how has your week been going?
Well, it's all of this has actually been very interesting, and it's kind of, I don't know, it makes this whole episode 2 feel kind of like a second date. You know what I mean?
You mean we're going to have sex on the next
episode? No. I should have known you were going to say something like that. Why?
Well, I just think we need to let Trish know, because, I mean, I'm not saying no. I'm just saying...
What I mean is...
We're not the only parties involved. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
For all of the adults listening, what I meant by that was that, you know, you when you have a first date, there really aren't very high expectations. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a first date, right?
You should not have picked this metaphor.
No, but isn't that right? You like, let's say you don't know each other very well, but you're just going out for coffee. You don't know each other, and, you know, anything could happen, so you don't really have any expectations for it. Or you know each other very well, and maybe you're going to be taking the relationship to a different place, but you know each other, so that's not such a big deal. But if the first date goes well, or even if it just passes, you know, then the second date has to be, you know, really great. Or
So you're saying that whereas we fooled them the first time, now they're going to listen and be like, what? Well, really? Yeah, why was I into this?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a... So there's a little bit of... I don't know if I want to say there's pressure, but it just feels a little different. Like you're going to be a little more self-conscious about it. Because when we first did it, we just sat down and just like we always do, we just sit down and talk about stuff. And it didn't matter that we were pulling the topics out of a hat, you know, because that's just the way we are. But, you know, this time it's like, wow, you know, these people are listening, they're paying attention, they're going to send us feedback about what we're talking about and all this stuff. And so it seems more, I don't know.
Yeah.
I
know why you're nervous. We got some very specific feedback for you that may come up later, but I'll save that.
That you haven't already told me about?
It's attached to a question. I don't believe I have. The hat and I have discussed this, but...
See what I mean? There's stress. There's a little bit of stress there. not that it isn't still fun, but it's a, you know, like I said, the whole second date.
See, I'm just praying for, like, no listeners, and then we'll just screw around. Although, as we were discussing earlier, we do have to have a certain number of listeners, because if we run out of stuff that they ask the hat, we've run out of show.
Yeah.
So
people have to submit those.
Keep writing, just don't listen.
Although we don't want you to stop doing the other stuff either, because I mean that the art and the music and the, you know, all that stuff's really cool. And
yeah.
You know, when we were first talking about this, the big thing was how it was going to be sort of listener driven as far as, you know, what we were talking about. And we didn't, I don't think either one of us even thought about other content in the show being from listeners, but that's cool too. So
yeah, and if you can come up with a cooler intro or outro, then Sergito, you know, if you send it, we'll use it.
Sure. So yeah, just
if it's not better, we'll say fuck off.
just keep everything coming, but don't forget to send things to the hat, because the hat is very sensitive. Actually, I think the hat felt a little, you know, left out.
Oh yeah.
Of everything.
And I shouldn't say fuck off. Apparently I'm not supposed to swear to the degree where it sounds forced.
Oh, really? I didn't know it ever sounded forced.
That's the thing. I'm like, these are clearly people who deal with me in situations where I can't swear.
Oh, okay.
Because I love doing it. But no. So I got to only... Well, I think it was because the last time I had fuck, and then I said F-bomb at other points,
mm-hmm.
and I said freaking at other points, so it was a little schizophrenic.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, I think another thing that everyone needs to understand is that, you know, we don't rehearse anything. I mean, this isn't like an act or anything. We know sometimes...
We probably should.
We know sometimes what some of the topics are because, you know, we can check the hat's email too, but we're not...
No, we can't. The hat just talks to us.
Well...
And lets us... Well, communicates with us. Okay. But no, that's... Otherwise, it wouldn't be particularly magical.
Well, maybe, but the point is, you know, we're not researching any of these answers or anything. I mean, this is all...
No, we got feedback that we should.
Well, maybe we should, but
I'm like, that's work.
All
go
off,
fuck yourself.
All off the cuff, we just... I mean, in case that wasn't already obvious, which I'm sure to some people it was.
I'm trying. It's that quality of craft that makes it look so effortless.
Yeah.
And sure. Some people spend years trying to get that feeling of that illusion of effortlessness. I say, how about just don't put in any effort?
Yeah. That'll do it too.
Pretty much, and it's faster.
It's been a really interesting week with all those things going on. It was kind of surprising, I guess. I mean, every day there was something new. And, other things were going on this week, of course, for me, but that was kind of the main thing, you know, getting a new piece of information and artwork and stuff. It's like, wow, I can't...
The blog was fairly active. We actually have comments and things.
Well, that reminds me, we should, you know, let everybody know that some of the feedback we got was just to us, like, you know, you got it. But a lot of that stuff could have been posted on the blog so that other listeners can see what other people are saying. I mean, if you feel more comfortable communicating with Paul, Tony Rye directly.
Paul?
I don't know where that came from. I mean, I know one Paul, and... Oh, we don't want to talk about that. But anyway...
who the hell is Paul?
I don't know. But if you want to talk to Tony Rye directly, that's fine. But you certainly feel free to just post things on the blog so that other listeners can see what everyone's saying, and maybe they'll say, oh yeah, I thought that too, or I wondered about that, or whatever.
And if it gets crazy enough, maybe we'll have to make forums, and I'll be really pissed off, but if that happens. And for the record, the blog, for those of you who picked this up strange places, themagicaltalkinghat.wordpress.com. Feel free to go there. In the thing, we've got the link. I put in the links to play the show directly. I put in the links to download. And after some issue with the feed earlier, I put in a link directly to our FeedBurner feed, which means you can click on that and it'll take you to this awesome page where it says, hey, what method do you use to subscribe to podcasts? Because whatever method you use, we've got a thing here, you can click on it. So that's good. And brand new news as of like yesterday, we are now officially on iTunes. So, cheer.
Very cool.
Yes. But I can't get the artwork to pull in. But that's okay, because some people don't like my artwork anyway. But I can't get that to pull in. That's a little annoying. But otherwise, it is there in iTunes now. So people can just go there and type in the Magical Talking Hat. And there we are. So that's awesome.
Very good. Paul, who's Paul?
I don't know. And I'm jealous.
I mean, I don't know who I'm jealous of. I know really one Paul, and...
Did you go see that movie?
I wouldn't confuse you with him.
The Nick Frost,
Simon Pegg
thing? That's called Paul.
Yes, I am thinking about seeing it, but...
We might. You know what we're going to go see this weekend? I'm going to go see Sucker Punch.
Okay.
I'm going to feel bad about it, but I'm going to go.
Here's the thing about Sucker Punch. It's not that I have a problem with what it is, I guess.
Adolescent male fantasy.
Well, that I do have a problem with. See, that's the thing. I really don't know how to put this into words. Think of like Resident Evil, the Resident Evil movies, okay?
Okay.
You've got you know, women beating people up, shooting people, whatever. And there's something sexy about that, and that's fine. But this is more... I mean, even the director kind of admits that, well, yeah, this is kind of a fantasy thing of mine or whatever.
And, I think, the phone's ringing in the background if you're hearing a weird noise. We apologize for that. Hopefully my wife will get it and shut that thing up. This is why we don't have kids.
And just that whole thing just kind of, you know?
I think the AV Club put it best when they referred to Sucker Punch as the greatest boner ever sold.
Yeah, well.
Because it really is. For those who aren't really familiar, it is Zack Snyder of 300 and Watchmen fame. Decided that he was going to take everything a 14-year-old boy likes and stick it in one movie with just the barest, like, connective tissue of a plot in it. We come up with a really ridiculous excuse to have this complete fantasy world where you can do whatever you want and you have hot chicks in fetish outfits and swords and robots and dragons and just whatever other cool shit you want, and it's ridiculous, and I'm gonna feel really bad about seeing it. I also think it's gonna be awesome.
Well, I mean, let me say this. You know, I know a teenage girl who's, you know, actually has some fairly strong feminist ideals who's interested in seeing it and can't wait to see it. Okay, so, you know, I'm not... it's just walking this really fine line.
No, I mean? I'm with you. I'm with you. And I may leave it sick to my stomach. I don't know. But I can't pass it up.
I probably wouldn't have thought too much about it, except that, like I say, the director or someone, the writer, somebody just came right out and said, oh, yeah, this is, you know, some adolescent fantasy thing of mine. It's like, oh, great. You know, that's not what I want to go see. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, no, it's... yeah, I feel bad about it, but
the previews look good. I mean, I got to give it that.
And that's the thing, and I had to explain because Trish saw it, and she's like, "Oh, this looks so awesome!" And I'm like, "Yeah, well, sort of." I'm like, "They've been working on this for a while, and it's cool, but it's very, you know, processed bullshit kind of cool."
Yeah.
And I'm still a bit mad at Zack Snyder for Watchmen. But I'm getting over it. I never saw 300 because I saw Sin City, and I won't see any more Frank Miller stuff ever again. But that's a whole other topic for a whole other time. Possibly a whole other podcast.
Yeah, we both really walked away from that one not feeling very good.
Ugh.
But, yeah, so I don't know. We will probably see it.
Well, I'm hitting this point where I'm just so desperate to see a fucking movie.
Well, it's...
there have been so many films that, like, I either weren't interested in, or as soon as they came out, I was like, yeah, never mind. Like, Red Riding Hood, I was like, that'll be cool, as long as it's not just Twilight. And then it came out, and all the critics are like, yeah, it's pretty much Twilight. And I was like, fuck! So I haven't actually been to the theater in, like, a month. And Trish and I have date night every week, but we haven't gone to see a movie in the theater because we're just, like, not interested. So now Paul and Sucker Punch will go see something.
Maybe it is the movie I was thinking of for some reason. But you don't look anything like the little alien in that movie.
No, I look a little bit like Nick Frost does in that movie.
Oh, maybe that's what
he's got the facial hair and stuff going. But...
why would I call you Paul?
You've always thought of me as your own personal Seth Rogen.
Maybe. Maybe that's it.
Well, okay, so you had a
boring... it'll keep bothering me. No, it wasn't boring. That's what I'm saying. It was very interesting with everything going on. With the podcast and people responding to it. I thought it was pretty great, actually.
Okay. Well, you had that week. And I was sick for part of the week. And, oh, my God, no. I do have to tell the story, though. And we should get to the hat soon, but I have to tell this story.
Okay.
This is an awesome thing. So, I'm homesick. And so, I'm doing two things other than sleeping and feeling horrible. One is watching Netflix, because they have Instant Watch.
Yeah.
And one is playing video games. By the way, for those who have Instant Watch Netflix... check out that Webb and Mitchell look, or that Mitchell and Webb look. I think it's that Mitchell and Webb look. It's British sketch comedy, David Mitchell and Richard Webb. I think it's Richard. I just checked out Series 3 the other day, and it's hilarious, so you should check it out. I really love that show. Particularly Series 3. Anyway, off the point. So I'm playing video games. I'm playing this game called Sacred 2, and it's this good old-fashioned fantasy game. Lots of quests and leveling and stuff. It's kind of like World of Warcraft on a smaller scale in a little bit. Like, it's pointless, but you're fun and you get to fight things with swords and all this. And there's this weird plot going through it of a heavy metal concert by a group called Blind Guardian. And you just, in villages, like, you run into people and they're like, oh, Blind Guardian's going to play a concert! And they're like, okay. And so at a certain point, you run into the lead singer of Blind Guardian and have to help him on a quest, which is all the band's instruments got, like, stolen by goblins or something. And so you have to track them down. And it's just ridiculous. And they all have the very Scandinavian names. Like, the guy, the lead singer is named Hansi. And, you know, there's, like, Max and Unter or something. I don't know. But, so you have to track all this stuff down. It's just ridiculous. But you finally finish that. And then they're like, you can come to the concert. And you go, and you cue in a cutscene. That's all just video game animation of the concert. And they do this song. And it's, you know, for your standard speed metal kind of stuff, it's pretty damn good.
Huh.
And I've seen it now through a few different characters on this. And I'm like, this is kind of cool. I want to get this for iTunes because I really kind of get into it. And they do the whole concert thing. And I'm like, I just like the song. So I go to look it up. And I type in Blind Guardian. Turns out, Blind Guardian, real band. Real band from Scandinavia since the 80s.
Wow.
Largely considered like the fathers of the speed metal genre. And also obsessed with fantasy stuff like Moorcock and Tolkien and stuff like that. And so all of their albums are like twist in the myth. And the tracks are like The Wizard and like The Dragon's Tower and all this stuff.
Huh.
And it's not bad for like generic sort of fantasy inspired speed metal out of the 80s. But they're still writing. And so it really kind of cracked me up. And of course, the one song they didn't ever release on an album or anything was that damn one from the video game. So I still can't get that one.
I never heard of them.
Yep.
But okay, but what video game was this?
It's called Sacred 2. Fallen Angel, I believe.
Yeah, that's okay. I know what that. We have that game.
Do you have that game?
Mm-hmm.
We've been playing that game a lot right now.
We started playing it, and I didn't get into it that much, and then the kids played it, and they liked it.
There's not any story. I mean, there is, but it's not a good story. The whole point of that game is you kill stuff, and you get higher loot, and you level up, and you do that.
Pretty much.
It's like World of Warcraft.
But the kids played it a lot, and they never ran into. Maybe they just.
They had to ask him about Hansi and finding. Finding all the stuff for Blind Guardian, they will know.
Well, but if they saw a little concert or something...
Well, and you definitely... can find that. Go to YouTube. Anybody go to YouTube and type in Blind Guardian Sacred 2, and you'll get it.
Huh.
And it's kind of funny looking, but I like the song a lot. Good, you know, I mean, it's good old-fashioned, you know, hard power metal, you know, with the heavy chords and crap like that, but I like it.
Which a lot of Scandinavian...
Exactly.
Speed metal is.
Yes. Anyway, okay, so now we're past 20 minutes, so maybe we should get to the hat.
There it is.
There's that. I don't remember who drew the last time, so...
Should I just go?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, hat, what shall we talk about first? And the hat says, if you could claim to be the author of any known book and get away with it, what would you claim? This is from Jen.
Jen! A very common.
I seem to love drawing her stuff.
Yes. We've had a lot of content from Jen, big content provider, and we're very happy about that.
Yes.
Well, you wrote books, so.
Well, that makes it difficult. And the truth is, even though I've written, you know, fiction, I'm more of a fan of nonfiction. So. I'd have to really think about it, but it probably wouldn't even be a fiction book, as far as, you know, a book that I'd like to say.
If I could get away with it, I would claim to have written Bruce Springsteen's autobiography, because then people would think...
That's a good idea. I didn't really think about that one.
Yes, I think that might be bending the rules a little bit.
All right, I'll try to think of a fiction book then. But you probably have one in mind, because you read a lot of fiction.
But that's the thing, like... The only thing I can think of is, like, what made the most money. Like, I don't know that I care about having, like, you know, fans.
How about...
Well, clearly, by the podcast, I don't care about having fans. And so I'm like, so... You know, I don't really know how to say that. I mean, is there a book that, like, I would be really proud if I had written it?
Maybe the Bible?
Yeah, dude. I would love credit for that. That's what I'm like, you know. What book would get me the most chicks? You know,
claim to be the author of a known book and get away with it. I just don't know. I'm not even.
I mean, books because this is the thing. There are books you like and there are books you don't like, and there are books. It's kind of like movies. There are books of high quality that you took a great deal of skill to write, and books that you don't think took a great deal of skill to write. And the Venn diagram is not that simple. there are plenty of books that I have liked that I'm like, yeah, they just vomited these pages out, but it's entertaining, and so...
Well, there are stories that I wish I'd thought of.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw The Matrix, I thought,
that would be good.
I should have thought of that. But I can't think of any book I've ever read where I thought, oh man, I should have.
That's the thing. I never really have a sense of jealousy.
That should have been me.
I mean, I'd be pleased like for people to think I had the ability of like Neal Stephenson, who did Snow Crash and Diamond Age And did you ever read any Stevenson?
No.
You don't read nothing.
I really don't read
it
that much.
Pisses me off.
Fiction.
I'm always trying to get you to read stuff.
No, I take it back. Pretty much anything I read from Neil Gaiman, I think to myself, I wish I could have.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If I could take credits for, like, American Gods.
Yeah.
Which is still arguably my favorite book out there. Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice.
Probably that one or...
And besides, if I took credit for Neil Stevenson, everybody would say I don't know how to finish a book because he doesn't know how to finish a fucking book. I love Neil Stevenson, but he just writes and then he's like, oh, wait, it's time to end. And so then, like, in 20 pages, he just makes up some shit for it all to resolve. Pisses me off. Every one of his books is like that.
Yeah.
And yes, I hear you screaming at the podcast, Chris. Shut up. It's true. Even Anathem. It ended abruptly and ridiculously. Be quiet.
I thought that a lot while I was reading the Gaiman's stories on Dream and The Endless and stuff like that. I thought, yeah, that I wish I'd come up with that idea.
You actual Sandman?
Yeah, Sandman.
Yeah. Well, that would be awesome. Yeah.
But let's see if I can think of anyone else. Yeah, his stuff, I guess. I think about
Tolkien. I'd like to get credit for Tolkien.
No.
I'd like for people to say I stole everything from Norse mythology.
I think the reason I feel that way about Neil Gaiman though is because I you know, when I first started, I hadn't read anything from him when I wrote my first novel, and in a way, when I read him, I thought, well, this is what I was kind of trying to do, and did really poorly. So that's kind of he. He kind of, I don't know, he kind of hit the mark where I was trying to hit, I guess.
Yeah, your stuff has sort of that anthropomorphizing of the myth kind of thing, where you want to take, like, mythic ideas and make them seem like real characters and so forth. I can see that in your work. I mean, no offense to you, Gaiman does it a little bit better, but I can see that.
Yeah, well, no offense taken. Well, and the truth
damn.
Is, the truth is we're not really trying to do the exact... same thing, but what I'm saying is that, I mean, American Gods was a very, I mean, I thought it was great. It wasn't, I would never have written that myself. You know, that's not really exactly what I'm going for,
yeah.
But there is a sense of, yeah, this is really close, you know, and he is very good at it.
Yeah.
But I can't really think of, but I don't read very much fiction, so I'm not a very good person to answer the question, I guess.
I have been living off of, for years, he did a collection of short stories not long ago called Fragile Things. Mm. I say not long ago, it's probably 5 years now. And Audible.com, feel free to sponsor us, Audible, has several of his audiobooks with him narrating them.
Mm.
And that one, I just love the stories in that, and I love hearing him read them. And so I've literally listened to that collection probably 20 times. Over time. That and the Graveyard book. Anybody out there, pick up the Graveyard book, especially if you're dealing with kids in the 10 to 15 range, because it's a children's book. It's a great, great children's book called the Graveyard book. Won the Newbery a couple years ago. Very good stuff. Your kids might even like that.
I have it, and I haven't read it yet.
I was going to say I could lend to you.
I've had it for a very long time.
Great book and not very long.
I was in Minnesota at a conference, and he was there, and he read, like, the first few pages of it.
I think we talked about this when I first had discovered it. You said that you had heard something
like
that.
Yeah, I think this was slightly before it was released, maybe, too. And I asked him, actually, a question there. I asked him, you know, because so many of his stories are mythic, you know.
Yeah.
Like, sort of a... If all the myths were true, you know, what would it be like today? What would the gods be doing today? Who would they be? What would they be doing? You know, stuff like that.
And he said, you haven't read Sandman?
Well, no. I talked about Sandman, too, and I asked him if, you know, where that came from. I mean, did he have a big interest in myth when he was younger? Is he kind of going for this kind of revival of mythic themes or whatever? And, his answer was basically to say, you know, he doesn't really think about it. He just does whatever he does, and it just happens to kind of go together in that mythic sort of theme, but he's not, it's not like he's, that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, and I see in Fragile Things, there are several stories that aren't really of that quality, and in fact, some of them that if I were like to describe the story, sort of boring in its content, but just the way he, in a lot of that, he proves his ability just sort of as a wordsmith, and again, him reading them, he is so great with the voices and the rhythm, I could listen to him read the phone book. Also, and Fragile Things has a novella that is an actual direct sequel of American Gods, unlike that weird spin-off book that I didn't like so well, Nancy Boys.
But he wrote the spin-off, though, right?
Yes, he did. He did.
And you were...
No, but this is a direct sequel with Shadow.
Oh, okay.
Stuff that happens with him later.
Yeah.
And we might be getting a little inside baseball for people who've not read American Gods. If you've not read it, read it. Now, stop the podcast, go read it, then you can come back and listen to the rest later as kind of a treat for doing your homework.
It's quite good, and even if it's not the kind of material you'd normally be into, it's, you know, he's a very good writer. I mean, it's,
absolutely.
It's hard not to enjoy it just for that.
We should get another topic.
Okay, well.
My turn! Don't touch it.
I won't.
Don't touch the hat!
I don't know. I don't want you to...
hurt myself?
Right.
As he's staring at us, she's pissed off. She's like, I'm trying to take a nap. Sorry, that's the cat.
And we just won't shut up.
Interesting. What are your favorite novel-to-film adaptations? This was sent without a name. Just so you people know for future... excuse me. If you don't send something that in the body of the email says, like, from so-and-so or signed so-and-so, the hat will... treat that as anonymous. The hat does not want to inadvertently identify somebody who didn't wish to be identified. So just having your name in the email or having your name in some sort of automated signature at the bottom does not count. And obviously you don't have to use your real name. You can use whatever name you like.
The hat is so polite.
And the hat does not want to get sued.
And respect... what? Can the hat get sued? Wow.
I think the hat thinks so.
Okay.
I haven't done the research.
The hat thinks so? That might be a clue to...
also, your topics, if you could keep them not too rambling and not too many examples, because sometimes the hat can get writer's cramp from transcribing all of your topics onto note cards for us to read. And a hat with writer's cramp is a sad thing. I am not kidding, people. I will turn this podcast around and we will go home.
Favorite novel-to-film adaptations?
Novel-to-film adaptations. Well, I have a ton of film-to-novel adaptations that I love. Like the novelization of Empire Strikes Back. No. Okay, sorry.
Boy, this is going to have to be all you because I...
don't see films? Oh, because you don't read.
I don't often read the book before I... I know that's completely backwards, but I often don't do it.
Well, and it's also tricky because there are novel to film adaptations that I like a great deal that I think did a shitty job of translating the novel into film. Good example for this one, V for Vendetta. I like the graphic novel and I like the film. The two really don't tie together for crap. And as an attempt to bring the graphic novel to film, the movie is shit. But it's just a good movie. I feel that way, honestly, and people are going to groan at this one, I feel that way about the original David Lynch version of Dune.
You like the original David Lynch
version? As a film.
Oh.
Not as anything to do with the novel Dune by Frank Herbert.
It
does not stand up in relation to that at all, but just as a sci-fi movie, I do like it.
Oh. I didn't like it, but I haven't read Dune either, so.
I not too long ago read the first four and stopped, and it was a harrowing experience, but the first is always worth it. Most people are like, stop at the first one. First is definitely worth it. Honestly, for the best job of taking books I knew and had read and turning them into movies, the best job I've seen of that, by and large, is the Harry Potter books. I thought they did really well with that.
But, you know, I didn't read any of the Harry Potter books. I just watched the films, and I was lost a lot of the time because it seemed like the filmmakers were trying to make sure they put into the film all the little parts and characters that people who read the books wanted to see, and without really bothering to string them together with a coherent narrative, because most people could fill in the blanks. You know, they, unlike me.
Yeah.
Where I'm watching and thinking, who, what, who's that, what's going on? And I'd have to talk to the kids afterwards and they could explain it all to me.
Well, and you might just be stupid, though.
Well, no, that goes without saying.
No, the reason I said it is because we're a mixed household. I read the books, and I made sure I read all the books, each book before we saw the movie. And in fact, the first book I read 3 hours before we saw the movie, which was the stupidest idea ever. And Trish has not read any of the books. And so we go together, and then when we leave, I ask her, I'm like, okay, so what were you confused about? And there are things, and there are bits that, like, she can't get the fullness of it, but there wasn't a lot that she was really lost on.
Oh, I was lost a lot. I mean, the
yeah, but you're a freak. I mean, that's you're true. William.
But the more recent...
So you probably noticed stuff that other people didn't notice.
There are more recent films than are better than the earlier ones, but there is a novel that I would love to see a film adaptation that's better than any of the ones that have ever been made before. Maybe I can talk about that.
Wait, so this novel is better than any film based on a novel you've seen?
I'm saying lots of films have been based on this novel, spun off from the novel, or try to use the premise of the novel as a base for the story, and I think they have all utterly failed.
Oh, okay.
And I would really like to see someone do it.
I think there's a pretty huge list of those, but what is yours?
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh, God.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it, and I'm so disappointed in everything that's ever been made based on it, because, and my biggest complaint is how every, okay, so... One of the first things that was ever done with the novel was a play was made, right?
Okay.
The play.
Which, I never read it, so.
Well, the play, which came before the film, and it was really the play that created that the format of, okay, so they go to graveyards and they dig up dead people and they sew them together and they make this creature, which is not how the novel portrays it at all. In fact, in the novel, Victor refuses really to say what his process is for creating the creature. Mm-hmm. But it's very clearly not just going out and finding parts of people and sewing them together. Because the creature is a lot bigger than a normal person. And there is a reason for that. Because Victor has to fashion all of the parts himself. So
it's an artificial creation.
Right. You can't just go out and get an arm or a leg or whatever because this creature is in proportion. That's another thing that's often said in the novel, is proportion, you know, in proportion to a regular human, except like 8 feet tall.
Big.
Yeah.
This is where you got your androids from, isn't it?
Well, no, but it seems to me that, well, and also they're...
Sorry, androids are a thing in his books that y'all should be reading.
Well, right, but there's also, at the beginning of it, Victor studies some alchemy and things like that. And then he goes to university, and he's kind of made fun of.
They called him mad.
No.
Wait. Did they or did they not call him mad at the university?
No. What?
Damn it. Don't you know? They called me mad at the university.
No, they didn't. See, all of this stuff is wrong.
Oh,
and
shit.
Victor is a very complex character. Oh, and the creature is very interesting and very... I don't know. They just always mess it up.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me, if they did it right, it would make so much more compelling story and really kind of get to the heart of what, you know, it seems to me that Mary was trying to say so many things in the story. You know, she was raised, her father was an anarchist. She didn't know her mother, but she was a noted feminist, you know, wrote a book and everything. So she was around some very... forward-thinking, you know, progressive thinking people. And I think she has a lot of good stuff in there that's just kind of overshadowed by, you know, digging up graves and stitching together people and none of the stories, all of the stories really sort of spin off from the play, and probably more to the point, the film, which was almost completely based on the play. And it's all about that, and I think some of the most profound things that she says in her novel are completely missed and blown away because of all that.
Well, and you get that with Old Enough Lit. I mean, similar thing with Dracula.
Like, yeah, I suppose
in the early, if you look at the early films based on Bram Stoker's Dracula, they set a lot of the assumptions that happen in later ones that if you read the book, aren't there at all.
Aren't there.
Although that being said, this is what made me think of this. Bram Stoker's Dracula, the movie with Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder and all that, is very different from the novel, from the original novel, and I actually like it better than the original novel. So I found that very interesting. Well, because
I liked that film too, and I hadn't read the novel.
Well, and the big thing is the novel. In the film, there's that whole, you know, he reminds her of his old beloved wife, and there's this deep passion they both have, and it's this whole, you know, in love with the dark side kind of thing, and like, you know, she has this passion for him, but she knows he's evil, and there's all this stuff. That doesn't exist in the novel at all.
Oh.
In the novel, he's just a vampire, and she's a chick, and he's gonna screw with her.
Okay.
And it's, there is no moral ambiguity in the novel at all. Although, and it's interesting also because the whole novel is done in journals and newspaper entries
and
stuff.
That's right.
And as somebody pointed out, because years ago I read a book called Mina, written by Mary Kiraly, and it's basically a sequel to Bram Stoker's Dracula, with a lot of porn in it. It's a good book, by the way. But the interesting thing about it is about two-thirds of the way through Bram Stoker's Dracula, Mina, Wilhelmina Harker, her journal disappears. And suddenly it's only the men talking. And her journal's not there anymore. And this had always sort of bothered that author. And so she actually starts off at the time where Mina's voice drops out of that novel with a journal that she's not sharing with anybody.
Oh.
And it goes from there. And the book is mostly about how, specifically Mina, but also Jonathan Harker, deal with going back to normal life afterwards. And, like, you know, having been this close to all the dark and taboo stuff, and how you just lead a normal life there. And then some supernatural stuff kicks in, and like I said, a lot of porn. But it was a very compelling book in that sense. But yeah, I very much liked having the emotional component in the film that I didn't think existed in the novel.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at with the original story as compared to what people make of it, because it... Well, I don't know. Maybe
yours seems largely philosophical.
Right, and maybe I'm just... Like you just pointed out, if it's a completely artificial being, then, you know, we have that in other stories with androids and stuff, but I don't know. Something about it being set in that time, and, you know, there's just... And it being a sort of a... You don't get the sense that, you know, he is an android, that he's an organic being, and that there's some process that was used to bring the creature to life, and the creature learns things by hiding in a shed and hearing what the family's doing and learns to talk and read and things that way, which is very cool, because, you know, that's establishing this notion that that you don't, no person is just, you know, born, created. Even if you create this huge creature, he's got to learn to talk, he's got to learn to read, he's got to learn how to associate with other people, and that whole process of socialization that he goes through is really interesting. And and not only that, but that the whole cautionary tale, the science, you know, we should be playing God or whatever, is so much more complex in the original story, because the fact of the matter is, in the novel, Victor Frankenstein creates a completely viable, intelligent, compassionate creature. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the creature at all. So just based on that, it's not very much of a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
The only thing that goes wrong is because he's so monstrous. Not just because of his size, but his eyes are not human eyes.
Okay.
They're kind of clouded and whatever. Because he's so monstrous, he's rejected by everyone. The first person to reject him is Victor, of course. And eventually this just kind of drives him crazy.
Well, and, okay, I'll be... Having not read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, what I can say is as far as the Frankenstein mythos created by films, there is only one subtext to it, and that is big, scary, stupid people have feelings too. And let's be completely honest here. Essentially, we've turned that into a metaphor for the developmentally disabled.
Well,
and basically it's like, oh, this big dumb guy doesn't know his own strength, and he's very childlike, and he can't talk, but he has deep feelings too, and we should not judge a book by its cover. End of lesson.
Well, but also,
and so assuming Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is not a one-note symphony and is in fact a classic with multi-layers of subtext, there's got to be tons more to the book that doesn't show up anywhere in the mythos.
It's amazing how rich it is. I mean, if you made a film, even a really good one, there's no way you could touch on everything. But I think, you know, to take the monster and just turn it into, well, we reanimated flesh, which is not what the story says at all, that destroys so many things from the original novel to me that are important, and it's really not even the same story anymore.
So when can we expect your screenplay?
Actually, I did have an idea, but it wasn't going to be like absolutely based on the novel. What I was going to do was I was going to sort of make not so much a modernizing the tale, but telling the story in a completely different way, to kind of get at some of the things that Mary Shelley was getting at, while, you know, sort of avoiding just remaking the novel.
Were you going to call it Frankie?
No. No, in fact, the creature was actually going to be a woman, and there was going to be some...
That could still be Frankie.
Yeah, I guess so. But I did have some ideas about that, and maybe I'll be working on that soon. But I wouldn't mind actually something being based actually on the novel. I after I read it, I went and I looked at films to see if anyone got it right, and really nobody. Nobody does. And it seems like... Not only do they have the creature being created out of, you know, spare parts, but that is really what the whole story is about how bad that is. And so it takes over the entire narrative. And it's almost like that iRobot movie that they made not long ago with Will Smith in it, you know. I mean, how anyone who knows anything about Asimov knows that film had hardly anything to do with anything he ever wrote.
And that's what I love, because I know so little about Asimov, and even I was like, this does not make any sense in his shit at all.
Which I actually didn't dislike it. And I thought maybe they could take Will Smith's character and the android and maybe start making some films based on some of the robot novels. Because in the robot novels, there's a robot and there's a detective and they work together and stuff. I thought, okay, maybe they can do that. But as far as, you know, the film, you know, being called iRobot, and which is the title of a short story that Asimov wrote, and anything like that, it was just ridiculous. You know, it was obviously just a marketing thing. And that's how I feel about just about anything that has Frankenstein stamped on it. It has nothing at all to do with the original story, and I wish that someone would tell the story as it was told, because I think it would really resonate with people today more than the stories that they tell now. But that's my opinion.
So that's not your favorite?
No.
I keep having this problem that I get chided for, and rightfully so. I'm finally starting to learn my lesson, is when there's a movie based on a book or a graphic novel or something, whether I've read it before or not, I tend to read the source material right before I see the movie to sort of remind myself. And that's a terrible, terrible idea.
Yeah, I would never do that.
I think that's what ruined Watchmen for me, because I lost my shit after Watchmen. And I don't think Watchmen was necessarily a bad movie.
Well,
But having just read the graphic novel, it messed me up.
Yeah.
I had the same problem with Coraline, another Neil Gaiman children's book, good book. I did not like the movie, and I think primarily I didn't like it because I had just read the book, and so the differences really annoyed me.
Yeah, I didn't like Watchmen or Coraline, and I haven't read any of the source material, but, you know, I generally assume that reading the source material is going to make a film disappointing. I mean, how can it not?
I am kind of glad, though, because with Watchmen's such a seminal graphic novel, and I read it a few years ago, and really did not like it. And then this movie came out, and I got to admit, at the time when I'm seeing the trailers, it was my first experience with, like, oh my god, this is a comic book I read, and it's literally, like, showing up on the screen. And so I went back and read it, and loved it this time. The graphic novel. And so I'm so happy for that. Because I really got so much more out of it this time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm mostly just vamping for time now, because I think we are too late in the show to pull out another question.
Oh, no, really?
So at this point, yeah. We're just, like, play some piano and I'll vamp for a while.
Well, asking a question about movies is, that's a big one for us because, you know.
William's a filmmaker and I don't do things, which means I end up watching a lot of movies.
Yeah, for some, I don't read a lot of literary fiction, but I watch a lot of film fiction. I mean, a lot of it. Probably, I don't know, maybe not more than most people because I'm pretty picky.
Well, I don't know how much you watch, but one thing I do know is you have no concept of what most people do in any respect. So I'm going to say probably not comparable to most people. Whether it's more or less, I can't say.
But I do. I probably watch in a way that, you know, most people don't. I mean, it probably a way that most people don't want to. I mean, I know when I sit
down... Sitting on top of a live badger.
No. You know, just looking at how shots are put together and then, you know, analyzing the script and characters and direction and stuff. I mean, most people, when they watch a movie, and I think rightly so, just want to sit back and let it kind of wash over. I mean, that's really how you're supposed to enjoy a movie, and I just can't do it. I sit there and I rip it apart. And nobody wants to talk to me about it because that takes all the fun out of watching movies. So
I went to college with a jerk like you.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. That's...
I've been thinking I need to go back and do Usual Suspects again.
We actually watched that fairly recently, and it held up, you know, pretty good. It was fun to watch with a couple people who had never seen it, and you didn't know.
Yeah, see, I accidentally got it spoiled.
Oh.
I tell a story. No, but, like, here's the thing. Not on purpose. Like, I'm seeing it with a bunch of friends who have already seen it, and they're being very good not to spoil it. And I'm sitting next to a guy who has also not seen it. And he turns to me like 30 minutes in. He's like, you know what? I'll bet da 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 da. And we're like, ha ha, yeah. And then we turned and we watched as his prophecy came true.
Yeah.
And so I've never had the, we're not going to spoil Usual Suspects here. Although it is kind of old now, people. Go and watch it. but yeah, so I got it sort of spoiled. And it's a similar thing. I got Sixth Sense spoiled in the same way. Not because anyone told me, because I saw it years later and I knew there was a big twist. And so when I'm watching in the first 10 minutes, I was like, I'll bet I know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And when you know it's coming, you can almost
And I
guess.
Feel bad because, like, I'll never get that back in either case. I'll never get the experience of not knowing and what that felt like. But, I've been listening to a lot of Kevin Pollak, so, who was in Willow, but was also in The Usual Suspects. And so he's been talking about it, and so I've been having the urge to get back to that.
Willow.
Wow. Well, yes, Kevin Pollak's comedian and character actor Kevin Pollak's first movie role ever was in Willow as one of the brownies.
He was one of the brownies.
With the mouse hat on, who would say, this way, no, this way! That was him. Him and Rick Overton, who weren't on set when they were on all these gorgeous location shots. They were all in post-production with a blue screen and satchel. With Ron Howard basically yelling at them, there's a horse coming near you on this side. Oh, look out for this. You have to duck. And they had to fake it. It was his first ever movie.
But he was in Willow, and then he was in...
Few Good Men was his big break.
Who was he in that?
He was defending counsel, I think. I haven't actually seen A Few Good Men, and I'm a little ashamed of that.
That's really weird, because I was just thinking about that.
Well, and actually, I just heard him today, and he was talking about... I heard him on the Nerdist podcast, and he was talking about how, like, he was, like, the only person in that entire cast who was not a famous actor.
It might have been the first film I saw with... what's his name in it? Oh, man.
Tom Cruise. Jack Nicholson. Okay.
Yeah. It might have been the... Well, the...
Really?
The firm... No, not the first I ever saw. Okay. The first I ever saw where I thought, you know, hey, he's not that bad. I think he was okay in The Firm. I remember when I saw him in Rain Man, I still thought he was terrible. But the scenes he had with Dustin Hoffman were good. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. When he's with a much better actor, he kind of raises his game a little bit. And I think in The Firm he was okay. And then when I saw A Few Good Men, I thought, well, this... this is really, because he was holding his own even in scenes where he wasn't with Jack Nicholson. Yeah. I thought that was pretty good. And overall, it's, you know, I think it's a pretty good movie.
I thought he was good in The Firm because Tom Cruise does one particular part really well, and that is a guy whose world is being pulled out from under him by some large conspiracy. And you see it in The Firm, you see it in Eyes Wide Shut, you see another thing where he's just like a normal guy and then suddenly like the world is turning on him and he freaks out slowly and like gets a little bit crazy and has to run a lot. He's really good at that part.
But Eyes Wide Shut, that was a good film? I haven't seen
it. No. Okay, here's the thing with Eyes Wide Shut. Everybody either really likes or really hates that movie, and they're all right. Because I love that movie for reasons personal to myself, and there are other people, and you also can't gauge how people react. Because people who I knew were going to love that movie for the same reasons I did hated it. And other people where I'm like, it's not your kind of movie. You should not see it. They watched it and they loved it. So you just have to see it and sort of go through it, and you'll come out either loving it or hating it. But that'll be it then.
Do you think it suffered at all by having been directed by two different people?
Or? I do, because it's literally just the ending that's not Kubrick, and you can tell, and it kind of sucks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
There's just like this last scene, and you're like, that's not Kubrick.
Oh.
That's kind of a mess.
That's too bad.
We really managed to blow this hour into just like movies.
Really? Yeah, two questions from the hat, and,
huh. And it's all about freaking movies. So, speaking of films.
Well, and books. Yeah.
You've made some films, haven't you, William?
Yes, I have.
And you've had some very handsome young men in some of them.
Yes, I have.
Also me.
Also you. and handsome young. What?
Ah, see what
okay.
I did there?
Okay, yeah, I saw. The I did want to say, you know, you mentioned plugging things last time.
Because you actually have things to plug.
I guess you could say. There's a website that I've been running for a long time. It's kind of slowed down as far as the forums and things being posted on it. I'm concerned, although that could change, especially if we keep making these and if people come to the forums and talk about other things.
Wait till he tells you what it's called.
It's JesusIsMyGrandpappy.com.
Bet you didn't see that one coming, did you?
Unless they already know. But
yeah, you don't plug to people who already know.
That's true. JesusIsMyGrandpappy.com. At that site, I have posted somewhere a film that features Tony. And a few other films. There's also some video blogs that I did sort of recently. There are sort of breadcrumbs you can follow to get to my books. There's a webcomic there.
An awesome webcomic.
That I produced. It's a limited run thing. It's done, but it's kind of fun to read.
A philosophical little mythological trip through the kingdom of fighting action figures.
Yeah, you kind of have to. It's a photo webcomic, actually. So take a look at it and tell me what you think. And a buddy and I record music, too. We're in a band called Pilot House, and you can sort of find some of that music by way of the site. And you can actually download some of the songs on iTunes. It's the band's called Pilot House. So if you want to give some of those songs a listen and tell me what you think, that's cool, too. But most of the stuff you'll be able to find is kind of the website's kind of a clearinghouse for all that stuff. So, and there's some forums there if you want to make some comments about anything that the forums address, or if you want to talk about this podcast, because you know we know our listeners like choices.
We do.
Well, okay, maybe I made that up.
But
people love choices, say, right?
They have so many podcasts to choose from out there. And they're listening to this. So does that mean they like choices?
What I mean is, or, you know, if they want to make a comment, they can leave it on the hat blog. They can contact us directly. They could go to my site and leave a comment.
You know, I'm really close to just giving you your own email for people who want to contact you, because the general feedback appears to be that you are the voice of reason in all this, and I don't question that. So we may have to do that, but we'll have to see.
They're just going to have to get to know me better, I guess. Although when you and I are together talking, I think I do sort of
by default.
Yeah, I play that role. Well, yeah, who doesn't? Because
when you put Tony next to anybody, they become the voice of reason.
Well, that you do that.
I'm not denying
you, it. You look at their circle of reason and you say, okay, I'm stepping outside of that, and it doesn't even matter what it is. You can support positions that you don't even believe in because
I regularly do.
Yeah, because well, that's just what you do.
Yes,
it's your role.
And in fact,
the universe.
I secretly play two big white power guys on email accounts that are very similar to ours. In case you didn't know. Just for the fun of it. No.
I mean, does anybody really know that this podcast is actually two people? I mean, it could just be you.
It could be. No.
You could be a very clever editor and
no one can see us, eh? So, like, you don't even know if we're nude, eh? Me and my brother here nude. So, like, I might look at the album and imagine there's Hosehead with no clothes on. I should stop. We're going to have to get royalties. I will put a link in the show notes to his blog. I will not put a link in the show notes to that Mitchell and Webb look series 3, but you should check it out on Netflix. It is very good. I don't really have anything else to plug this time around.
Read and watch everything we talked about because
absolutely
interesting stuff.
Consume your culture based on our ramblings. Really. That just goes for life as a whole. Get yourself some bracelets that say WWWD and WWTND. And then you can be like, what would William do? What would Tony not do?
And they're almost the same thing.
Yeah, really. You can wear them on the same wrist. It'll work out fine. We got that. That's our first merch. It's gonna be WWWD bracelets.
And of course, the reason you want to know what I would do is just because it's a good laugh. Not necessarily because you want to go do that.
Look at your bracelet and think of William and go,
what a freak,
silly William. No. Okay, we are over now, so we should definitely stop. And I'm gonna play that awesome outro by also donated by Sir Guido. I want to remind you, if you want to go look at all things Magical Talking Hat related, go to themagicaltalkinghat.wordpress.com. And as always, please, please email us at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We need topics and questions or the show dies. This is your power, people. You have no power in your regular lives. Your jobs, your marriages, your kids. You really you can't control them. It's so frustrating. You can control our podcast with your questions and topics, and we will have to talk about the stupid shit you send us.
Feel the power.
There you go. Okay, so that's all for today. Please disregard the last hour.
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.